Hello, and welcome to episode number 13 of the Point of Convergence podcast. As always, I'm your host, Exoacademian. Even before H.G. Wells wrote his classic War of the Worlds, depicting an alien invasion on behalf of a technologically superior civilization from Mars, human beings have looked to the skies, meaning more specifically outer space, as the obvious source for visitation from a group of others. As we've grown in our understanding of just how discombobulatingly vast our cosmos is, populated by countless galaxies, each containing untold numbers of star systems and planets, that assumption has seemed all the more secure. The final frontier was clearly out there. And so we turned our attention, as well as our most advanced telescopes and technologies, to the stars, in hopes of confirming the existence of these others. Ever since the dawn of the atomic age, the apparent presence of advanced craft buzzing in and around our skies, combined with reported contact between people and various non-human entities, has led many to conclude that the epoch of contact with advanced non-human intelligence is already upon us. And of course, following the common sense thinking of the day, these others have been assumed to be space travelers who've traversed astounding astronomical distances to arrive on and around our planet. In more recent decades, this model, termed the extraterrestrial hypothesis, has met with some competition from what is most often termed the interdimensional hypothesis. This competing notion postulates the visitation of beings who are coming not necessarily from far-flung star systems, but from parallel dimensions or other universes. This hypothesis has been advanced by well-respected ufologists such as Jacques Vallée, who argue that the data best fits with this model. What sometimes flies under the radar in this debate as to the origin of these others is a much more close-to-home explanation. It's an explanation that is so close to home, in fact, that some find it downright disturbing. I speak of a model advanced most famously by a researcher named Mac Tonnies, termed the crypto-terrestrial hypothesis. This hypothesis posits that these others are actually terrestrial creatures, flesh-and-blood beings just like us, co-occupants of our world, who have operated in stealth right alongside us since time immemorial. This hypothesis goes further, arguing that many of the bizarre reported sightings and interactions with beings from distant human history, I speak of fairies, elves, and such, which are of course disregarded slash explained away today as mere mythological constructs of pre-scientific societies, are actually incidents of contact with these very same crypto-terrestrials. Is it possible that the others we've heard so much about, or at least some of them, could actually be terrestrial in origin, perhaps a distant offshoot of a common human ancestor? And have they, supposed masters of stealth and disinformation, been actively misdirecting us into believing that what we've solely been dealing with are extraterrestrial visitors, simply to throw us off their scent? This is exactly what's postulated in Mac Tonnies' much-respected book, The Crypto-Terrestrials, A Meditation on Indigenous Humanoids and the Aliens Among Us. Tonnies' counterintuitive and disconcerting crypto-terrestrial hypothesis is the topic of this, the 13th episode of the Point of Convergence podcast. As we begin this podcast, I'd like to give a little bit of a background on Mac Tonnies, the person responsible for advancing this crypto-terrestrial hypothesis. Mac Tonnies was an American blogger and author who wrote on topics such as ufology, futurology, transhumanism, and high strangeness. Tonnies' compelling writing earned him a niche, dedicated readership. Sadly, he died suddenly of cardiac arrhythmia at the age of just 34 in 2009. Interestingly, for Tonnies, The crypto-terrestrial hypothesis was not his initial thinking on this topic. Regarding the UFO phenomenon, this is what he says at the beginning of his book. Quote, "I began this book pursuing the commonalities between the UFO phenomenon and the equally bewildering spectacle of our emerging technological future. I was especially intrigued by the prospect of humans becoming something other than strictly biological, increasingly viewed as a necessary evolutionary step in the wake of an imminent singularity, a moment in history in which our intelligence, augmented and disseminated by machines, transcends the imaginable. My working hypothesis that alien visitation was best viewed in cybernetic terms remains a valid paradigm for interpreting the arrival of an alien intelligence on this planet." Unquote. Eventually, though, as he considered the full body of the evidence, historically even, he came to reconsider this initial direction. And quoting again from the book, quote, "But the more I read and contemplated, the more my post-biological theory seemed lacking. While I could readily envision a global invasion directed by an unseen machine intelligence, the enduring nature of the UFO spectacle forced me to rethink my assumptions. Like ufologist Jacques Vallée, I viewed our response to the appearance of apparent non-human vehicles in our skies as the work of deliberate psychological conditioning, probably but not necessarily benevolent. Contrary to popular perceptions, UFOs are far from a recent occurrence. Written and oral accounts point to an experience of exceptional age and patience." If alien encounters were the work of some godlike artificial intelligence, an omniscient peacemaker sowing memes in an effort to ensure our evolution conformed to some unknown alien ideal, then we might reasonably expect it to remain hidden. This would neatly account for the lack of hard evidence that would force the UFO question out of theoretical limbo and into the mainstream. A post-biological overseer, something along the lines of the inscrutable black monolith in 2001, would have a vested interest in obscurity. As biological beings, we might even lack the perceptual acumen to properly discern its presence. Unquote. And so what Tonnies is suggesting here is that initially he considered perhaps a highly advanced, even post-biological, intelligence was working its way subversively into our collective unconscious to define the mythos of our entire culture, of our species, and thus control our evolution, from a distance, as it were. But eventually he began to question this hypothesis, and I'd like to outline some of his reasons why. Again, from the book, I quote, "The primary challenge to this mythological approach was the explicitly physical nature of so many encounters, including, but by no means limited to, the relatively recent epidemic of abductions, in which witnesses report being kidnapped from workday surroundings and subjected to novel medical tests. This seems remarkably crude for an intelligence as subtle and abiding as the entity I had imagined. If recent developments in our own technology are any indication at all, we will probably harness much less intrusive techniques within the next few decades. For an intelligence thousands or millions of years superior to our own to stoop to such clinical levels struck me as absurd." Of course, the very idea of an artificially emplaced psychosocial conditioning system hinges on absurdity. Vallée and John Keel, author of the paranormal masterpiece The Mothman Prophecies, have written extensively on the nonsensical element that accompanies so many accounts of assumed extraterrestrial visitation. This absurdity only makes sense if the phenomenon isn't as it seems, but rather appeals to our collective unconscious for reasons we can only guess. Or so I thought. Finally, I wondered the unthinkable. What if the antics of the absurd humanoids documented by Vallée weren't the work of some overarching intelligence? What if they happened just as reported, without the need to invoke externally imposed psychosocial thermostats? This notion struck me as deliciously ironic. It suggested that the encounters with non-humans that haunt our folklore were real, not necessarily projections preying on our gullibility. Could fairies and elves and all their mythical successors be distorted representations of an actual species? Unquote. And this is basically how Tawney's arrived at this new hypothesis, almost as an ironic aside. After first stumbling across this rather counterintuitive notion, Tawney's found that, as he considered the full body of evidence from the literature of the UFO phenomenon, that much of the data fit this hypothesis rather nicely, and importantly, tidily. Thus, he ultimately arrived at what he termed the crypto-terrestrial hypothesis, of which he writes, quote, "I propose that at least some accounts of alien visitation can be attributed to a humanoid species indigenous to the Earth, a sister race that has adapted to our numerical superiority by developing a surprisingly robust technology." The explicitly reproductive overtones that color many encounters suggest that these indigenous aliens are imperiled by a malady that has gone uncured throughout the eons we have coexisted. Driven by a puzzling mixture of hubris and existential desperation, they seek to perpetuate themselves by infusing their gene pool with human DNA. While existing at the very margins of ordinary human perception, they have succeeded in realms practically unexplored by known terrestrial science. Reinventing themselves at will and helping to orchestrate a misinformation campaign of awe-inspiring scope, unquote. To clarify further, Tawney suggested that these others, these crypto-terrestrials as he called them, may be as far ahead of us as we are of chimpanzees, in many ways anyway. And this could of course explain their ability to avoid detection by us for so long, both because of their potential technological superiority, as well as a possible cognitive advantage they have over us, their cousins, as it were. But of course, they couldn't be completely superior. That wouldn't explain their need for us. And Tawney suggested that they have various deficits when compared to us as well. For instance, they don't have a global infrastructure as we do. Tawney's also saw them as mostly nomadic, which would explain why we don't find evidence of their cities, their civilizations, and such. So what do you think? Do you think there's any possibility that there could be a sister species to human beings, another set of humanoids that coexist with us? Once you get past the strangeness and, if you will, the alienness, pun intended, of this idea that there could be another humanoid species co-populating the Earth with us, you do see some of the pros to this theory, at least I do, and I'd like to outline some of those arguments in favor of the crypto-terrestrial hypothesis. Now, several of these arguments are actually made in Tawney's book, and he does make a compelling case. I'd also like to add a couple of my own thoughts as well. We'll start with number one, Occam's razor. Perhaps this is the simplest argument. What I mean by that is, perhaps the first argument in favor of the crypto-terrestrial hypothesis is that it does away with the need for either interstellar travel across astronomically large distances of outer space, as postulated in the extraterrestrial hypothesis, as well as the need for extra dimensions or dimension-hopping capability / technology, as postulated by the interdimensional hypothesis. And this is what I meant earlier when I said that this hypothesis tidily deals with the data, because it doesn't necessitate other aspects like interstellar travel or dimension hopping. Let's move on to number two in terms of the pros for this crypto-terrestrial hypothesis. Number two is their humanoid appearance. Evidence in strong support for this hypothesis is the appearance of these others. They look, by many accounts, even if there is some variance in the descriptions historically, remarkably humanoid. It is said that some of them could even pass for us, as long as you don't look too closely. And as we've discussed on previous episodes on this podcast, because creatures tend to evolve to be better adapted to their natural habitat, This would lend support to the idea that this is a species native to the Earth. In his book, The Cryptoterrestrials, Tawney suggests that the historical literature describing a species that may primarily reside subterraneously helps to potentially explain the appearance of these others. They are often reported as pale and having very large eyes when compared to Homo sapiens, because they've adapted to their primary environment, the cavernous depths of the Earth, where large eyes would benefit a humanoid species living in near, if not complete, darkness much of the time. So this is basically number two in terms of arguments for this hypothesis, that these others look humanoid because they are actually native to the Earth, but that their differences in terms of appearance from human beings comes down to where they live on the Earth, that is, subterraneously. And this would explain their large eyes, their pale skin, their hairless bodies. Now, here I would also like to add that we now also know there are likely a plethora of Earth-like planets in our Milky Way galaxy alone, let alone in the larger scope of the universe. So this is not necessarily the smoking gun many people first considered it to be, but nevertheless, it is a strong argument in favor of the cryptoterrestrial hypothesis. Let's move on to number three in terms of arguments in support of the cryptoterrestrial hypothesis. Number three is the genetic component. DNA extraction, interbreeding, and hybridization of the two species make a lot more sense if the others are somehow biologically compatible with modern Homo sapiens. And for that to be the case, Tawney postulates, that perhaps we share a common ancestor. Why would they be doing this, though? Tawney suggests that perhaps the others are, as he puts it, genetically impoverished, with a need to add fresh, healthy stock to their efforts at ensuring the future of their species. Now, I have to say, this is a pretty strong argument. This is an aspect of the data that is definitely controversial and hard to reckon with. The strange interbreeding hybridization programs, the strange sexual nature of some of these interactions with the supposed non-human intelligence. If they are somehow an offshoot of humanity that is actually trying to mislead us while they actually improve their genetic stock and ensure their future, well, this would make a lot more sense. In some ways, this is more commonsensical than the idea that this is all about ETs doing this to affect us subconsciously. Okay, let's move on to number four in terms of the aspects of the data behind the UFO phenomenon that lends support to this cryptoterrestrial hypothesis postulated by Mac Tawney's. Number four is the others' interest and concern over our nuclear weapons. Now, this, of course, would make a lot of sense for a species with plenty of skin in the game, so to speak. Clearly, if there is a species that would be the most concerned with our reckless death wish endeavor of constructing enough nuclear weapons to destroy the entire human population and a large portion of the greater biosphere several times over, it would be an aware, intelligent species that cohabitates with us on the Earth. Now, of course, there is also plenty of reason in my mind to believe that ecologically conscious, highly evolved, oneness-minded ETs or interdimensionals would also be concerned with this behavior, especially if we live multiple lifetimes and have histories spread across several kinds of interstellar species, greys and humans, for instance, as we've heard attested to in some of the experiencer literature. But nevertheless, this is a strong argument in favor of the cryptoterrestrial hypothesis. If there's one species that would be very concerned with our efforts in these areas, it would be a species native to the Earth. Okay, on to number five in terms of the aspects of the data that support the cryptoterrestrial hypothesis. Number five is the misdirection evidenced in the contactee/abductee literature. If they see us as overtly aggressive and an outright threat to their ongoing existence, then stealth and misdirection might be part of their game plan. By leading us to continue unabated in our belief that they are space travelers, they can continue to bend our actions to their will without fearing detection and direct interference from and or by us. Speaking of misdirection, this leads us into argument number 6, which is the long history of this phenomenon. As we've discussed before, these others have apparently been here all along, perhaps even before the onset of human civilization. And interestingly, perhaps it is their intent, their game plan, to change their appearance to match with our expectations. And it's only more recently, in the 20th and 21st century, that this facade has taken on the nature of UFOs and space travelers. And if you think about it, that would be an ingenious plan, because by playing into our expectations, our assumptions, we never question this. If they feed us what we expect, we assume what we're seeing is reality. Let's move on to number 7 in terms of the aspects of the data behind the UFO phenomenon that fits well with this crypto-terrestrial hypothesis. I'd also add that this final argument goes a long way to explaining some of the biggest challenges this hypothesis faces. Number 7 is the evidence of consciousness manipulation in the UFO/abduction literature. The biggest challenge this hypothesis faces, of course, is how on earth such a species could evade detection so completely and for so long. And this is especially the case in our modern era, with advanced global sensor systems and increasingly HD cameras almost everywhere. But if this species has the consciousness-altering capabilities we've heard described in the abduction literature and the contactee literature and even the UFO sighting literature, then this would help us perhaps overcome this seemingly insurmountable hurdle. And now I'd like to address a few concluding thoughts as to this crypto-terrestrial hypothesis. Number 1, it's important to remember that these different hypotheses as to the source, the origin of these others, are not necessarily mutually exclusive. It could be that part of the way that this species, if they in fact are humanoid and of the Earth, the way that they evade us so effectively is because they also maybe can dimension hop. This may be a capacity they have, even an evolutionary capacity. Another thought that I'd like to offer for your consideration is the kinds of craft we've seen buzzing around in our skies ever since the early to mid part of the 20th century has always puzzled me, if I'm honest. And why? Because these vehicles so often look so very much like what I'd imagine our next-gen tech would look like. But what are the odds that an ET civilization would show up that just so happened to be technologically within a few generations of us? Those chances seem very, very slight, especially when you consider the vastly different ages of different galaxies and different civilizations. Unless, of course, this is part of a coordinated scheme to help in our evolution. This could be. That's plausible, and I think perhaps even likely, if this is an ET source, or at least some of them are an ET source. But make no mistake, I don't think it's merely coincidental that these UFOs, these UAPs, as they're called now, look so much like craft we might very well develop in our own lifetimes within 30 to 50 years. Of course, in addition to the idea that they could be donations from an ET source, this could also lend strength to the crypto-terrestrial hypothesis that, again, they're feeding us our expectations. They are creating a facade of what we expect, what we assume to see. Worth considering anyway. And as a last point, again, when it comes to the intelligences that make up what we collectively, colloquially, refer to as the phenomenon, my best guess is usually all of the above. Meaning, I believe we're likely going to find definitive proof that reality is such that extraterrestrials, interdimensionals, and perhaps even some modified version of crypto-terrestrials are all part of the larger tapestry of existence. Just as our ancestors could not perceive the color blue, we may not be able to detect the presence of these others, yet, not many of us anyway, and not usually all the time. But our evolutionary trajectory very well may be taking us in that direction. In fact, I'm quite sure it is, so long as we don't blow ourselves back into the medieval ages along the way. And on that note, we've come to the close of another edition of the Point of Convergence podcast. Let's keep this conversation going and growing. I'd just like to add also, if you'd like to pick up some merchandise, some swag related to this podcast, you can go to pointofconvergence.net. That's pointofconvergence.net, where you'll now find I have a store there with things like t-shirts, coffee mugs, phone cases, whatever you like. Some great designs there. Check that out. In the meantime, please continue to spread the word. Tell others about this show if you think they would be interested. But until next time, from deep within the Blue Ridge Mountains of North Carolina, this is Exoacademian signing out.